Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Stokes Nature Center recently brought in writer Michael Kleber Diggs to headline the kickoff event and their participation in the NEA Big Read. The book Stokes Nature Center is focusing on is You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. Michael Kleber Diggs was in Logan on Saturday to share his work from the book and to lead a writing workshop to inspire participants to create their own work celebrating our natural world. Michael Kleber Diggs is a poet, essayist, literary critic, and arts educator. He's author previously of a poetry collection, Worldly Things, which won the Max Ritvo Poetry Prize. He is author of a forthcoming book coming out next year, My Weight in Water, a memoir about his complicated relationship with lap swimming. And his poems and essays often explore themes of intimacy, community, empathy, and grace. He is the 2023-25 Jerome Hill Artist Fellow in Literature. He teaches creative writing at Augsburg University and through the Minnesota Prison Writing Workshop. I had a chance to record an interview with Michael Kleber Diggs on Saturday. Very pleased to welcome in Michael Kleber Diggs, who, according to his website, I'm going to pull that up here, michaelkleberdiggs.com, is a poet, essayist, and literary critic. Probably many more things as well. Michael Kleber Diggs, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So how would you describe yourself? Is that those good descriptions?
Those are good descriptions. Many things. I always hope it's centering around art, that art is the thing that's bringing me forward into all of those different postures. So writing poems, writing essays, teaching creative writing, and thinking about books that other people have written.
Yeah. Wonderful. Again, michaelkleberdiggs.com for the website. You have, I'm going to pull this up here, you have a list of, if I can get to this, 12 True Things and One Lie.
Yeah.
On your, I think it's on your website.
Yes.
Your father was a dentist. Uh-huh. Very interesting. Mother retired mental health professional. Twin brother.
Yes.
Who's in visual arts.
Yes, he's a photographer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Martin Diggs. Spoke to Ronald Reagan in the White House Rose Garden.
Yes.
So far, we haven't gotten to a lie.
No.
Okay. Interned the office of the Honorable Senator Harry Reid. Many friends who knew him before he was married call him Diggsy. Uh-huh. Many friends who met him after he was married call him MKD.
That's correct.
So what changed there? You're more dignified after you're married? Or what?
Let's go with that. I like that answer. But it's my wife, when I met her, was Karen Kleber, and I was Michael Diggs. And when we got married, we both decided to change our last names.
Okay. And then you became MKD.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Has a love-hate relationship with Formula One racing. That's interesting.
I love Formula One, and then I also sometimes give myself a hard time. It's a really cool sport. I've enjoyed learning about it. I'm still on a learning curve about it, and super hard on the planet.
Yeah. I guess love-hate there, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. You're in St. Paul,
mm-hmm.
which is considerably north of Indianapolis.
Correct.
Which is the epicenter, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
How'd you get interested?
During the pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But there was a specific show on Netflix called Survive to Drive or something like that. But there's a show on Netflix about Formula One racing. And through that show, I got to know the racers as people and as characters in a grand drama where there are heroes and villains and teams and individuals and everyone's going through up and down cycles and big personalities, and I love a good story, and that was the hook. That's what got me into it.
Yeah. You love lap swimming.
Yes, very much.
In fact, you have a forthcoming collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About lap swimming.
Yeah, I've been working on a book called My Weight in Water, and it's about, like I say, it's about my complicated relationship with lap swimming. I love to swim. I love being in the water. Being in water is, to me, it's one of my happiest places. And it's a little complicated. There aren't a lot of black lap swimmers. So when I'm swimming, I can find myself feeling black in a very white space. Swimming is one of those places where we can think about our bodies in a different way. It's an intimate public space. And so it was an opportunity for me as a larger person to think about body shyness, body image, to think about race and recreation, to think about my family's history and America's history.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. We'll look forward to that book.
Yeah,
coming out next year. Yeah. You're not very good at golf, but love to play.
Yes, and I've played for many years, and golf is something that my grandpa initially taught me how to play. And one of the things, and I would say swimming is this way for me as well, I'm not a very fast swimmer, and I'm not a very talented golfer. And as I've gotten older, I grew up very competitive and always wanting to win. I have really learned to just love a thing for the thing, to love the experience of it, the challenge of it, to engage with an activity over a long period of time without necessarily expecting that you're going to get faster. And of course, I'm 57 now, so there's also the element of like my body is different. I'm not as strong as I used to be, not as vigorous. And there's something about that I find honestly kind of beautiful, like just still doing it anyway.
Yeah, just for the thing itself, yeah. Love watches and clocks.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think that started when I was very young. When I was 8, I got a Mickey Mouse Timex watch, and I absolutely loved it. And I really love mechanical things. I'm just enchanted by, you know, I'm wearing a relatively simple automatic watch that doesn't have a battery, that's powered by the motion of my wrist. And I find that really fascinating and kind of awesome. My favorite watches are not 100% accurate. Like they race ahead a little bit or they lag behind a little bit. And it gives me an opportunity to think about my relationship to time too. But I love handmade things, beautiful things, imperfect things, but pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, I think we've come to the lie here. 52 feet, 7 inches tall.
I am not 52 feet, 7 inches tall. And while there's aspects of that I think would be enchanting, I think it would make my life difficult when it came to things like riding in a car or traveling, going to the grocery store. So, yeah, that's the one that is not true.
Yeah. When I was going through this list quickly, I didn't immediately spot that. I read that as 5 feet, 2.7 inches tall.
Yeah.
And then I looked more closely. Yeah. I want to talk just briefly about, you have an essay in a book called A Darker Wilderness, mm-hmm. Black Nature Writing from Soil to Stars. You say not a lot of black lap swimmers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess a stereotype, you can tell me if this is right or wrong, a lot of black people get out into the wilderness.
This is an area that I think the correct answer is not as many. And there's some data from the national parks that kind of help us understand that. I do think among certain African-American people, certain black people, they don't see themselves as welcome in some natural spaces. There's a tremendous amount of work and a tremendous amount of good work that's being done to help people repair those relationships. Time and nature for me has been foundational in my life. One of the things that I explore in that essay is called There Was a Tremendous Softness. And it was about a time when my twin brother and I lived with our grandparents after our father died. And, you know, we'd had this difficult moment in our life. And then we were welcomed by our mother's parents, and we lived in their small house in Wichita, Kansas, but they were people who had a completely different relationship with the outdoors. Our grandfather he went fishing. He was a hunter. They had a garden in their yard. Time outdoors and time in nature to them was not a distinct, separate activity. It wasn't a scheduled thing. It was a daily thing. And my brother and I went from being city mice in Kansas City to, in a weird way, country mice in the center of Wichita, Kansas, which is the largest by population city in Kansas. But we were outdoors suddenly all the time. And it wasn't unique. It was daily. It was so integrated into how they operated their lives that it became that way for my brother and me.
What do you think in general being in nature does for you, I guess, and for people.
Yeah. So I live in, I would say, I live on the fourth busiest street in St. Paul, Minnesota. And we also live across the street from a regional park. So we have this really kind of great setting. It's very city. A lot of cars drive by. At the corner of our lot, there's a traffic light. Like, we live in a busy place. And I can cross the street and walk 100 yards. And suddenly I'm in this woodland outdoor classroom where I can imagine I'm kind of far away from it all. In Minnesota, just as in Utah, we're blessed with these rich, gorgeous natural spaces. And so sometimes I also leave the cities and head into northern Minnesota, into Lake Country and the Superior National Forest. And there's a real reset that happens there. And I think it's constitutional. Like, it affects the body in a profound way. It's very dark. It's very quiet. The air is pristine. The stars are, like, vibrant. They're electric. They're so bright. You can catch aurora borealis from time to time. But really what happens for me is two things. My cadence resets. My rhythms do. I'm able to occupy my time preparing things and doing things, getting ready to kayak, getting ready to cook on a Dutch oven that's sitting atop a fire that we built, that kind of a thing. And I think almost as a result of that, I also am brought into a perspective of awe. This is beautiful. This is amazing. This is preserved. This is divine. And that's really what it means to me. And to be candid, when I am there, I think a lot about my friends who don't do that, who have been in some ways disconnected from their time in nature. My wife and I, our daughter was not a camp kid. She didn't like to go camping. She didn't like bugs. She's able to kind of appreciate being in natural spaces in a different way. But I think it's really beautiful and helpful to be moving our bodies, to navigate through tricky terrain and dense terrain, and spend time among flora and fauna and taking in all of that, I don't know, just kind of awe.
Mm. It's interesting. I can kind of relate. What your daughter doesn't like about nature is bugs.
Uh-huh.
That's what,
yeah.
That's what it's off-putting to her.
And yeah. I have to say, if you come to northern Minnesota, and please do, it's so gorgeous, you are going to have to deal during the daytime with relentless black flies. And there's this moment near dusk when they leave, and you're like, oh, thank goodness. And you can watch the mosquitoes come in. It's like a shift change. So there's always some kind of small menace that you have to confront in order to enjoy that. And I think that's kind of part of it, too. Like, we don't have a lot of control over natural spaces. And we have to kind of surrender that when we're in that setting. And there are a few things you can do. But most of it, I think, is just find a way to abide. Just,
yeah.
Yeah.
I often joke with friends, the way I enjoy nature, it's rolling down the window
as I'm, yeah.
as I'm
that
driving
counts.
Through nature.
That counts.
But I probably ought to get a little, and I do get a little closer sometimes.
Good, so, good, good.
Yeah. I want to talk, before we get to the big read and the book that Stokes Nature Center is going to be bouncing off of, I guess, for a time here. You're involved in the kickoff activities. On your website, again, michaelkleberdiggs.com, you have something for Poetry Northwest. It's called Field Note. Those aren't pine siskins, they're house sparrows. And you talk about during COVID, when, I guess, like a lot of us, you're suddenly home.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you look to the outside, you look to nature.
Yes.
Right? Tell me a little bit about this.
Sure. Well, I want to go back to your analogy. One of the things that happened is I realized I was working at home, that I had not had a job in my adult life where I could open a window. Like, most of my, I had an office, I had windows, but they didn't open. And so I'm working at home. It's spring, it's April, entering into May of 2020. And I have the window open. And all day while I'm working, there's bird song, squirrels are chortling. maybe two neighborhood dogs start to have a brisk conversation with each other. So while I was doing my job, I was surrounded by these nature sounds. We have two dogs, and at the time, although we might have only had one, but we have two dogs, and they also needed to go outside all the time. And I was a busy person. My time in nature most of the days was very limited. The way I explained it is that I would go outside with my dogs and stand in our front yard and tell them to hurry up. And then suddenly I'm at home. We're walking in the neighborhood. I'm also needing that time outside and that fresh air and benefiting from it. Meeting neighbors that I've lived nearby for a long time, but hadn't had a chance to say hello to. And also experiencing nature in a different way. So this essay, Those Aren't Pine Siskins, is about a couple of things. It's the presence of these birds singing all day in a time of great despair in America. And there are two things happening in the Twin Cities in that moment. There's the rising pandemic, and then here comes, not long after that, the death of George Floyd. And so a lot of difficult things are happening in our city at the same time. And what's persisting through all of that are these birds who are just singing all day. And I became fascinated. And by the way, we would walk right by them, and they would stay in this bush without moving, which was fascinating to me. And over time, I became kind of fascinated with them. This essay is also a joke that I have with myself. I have a tendency to love nature without naming it. I don't always know the name of a tree that I'm enchanted by. I don't always know the name of an animal or a bird, what kind of bird that is. But I became interested in these birds, and I was looking through a book, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure those are pine siskins. And I was telling someone about them, and they said, well, actually, Michael, I think they're house sparrows. Not nearly as exciting. And I loved that too. I loved the error. I loved being new in the way that I was thinking about nature. And I loved having an opportunity to think about that and write about that.
Mm. I love this image. You mentioned briefly in this essay, there are so few cars, you could smell a car.
Yeah.
Coming down the road. And I kind of have a little bit of memory of that from COVID. And then quickly we forget, right? But
Yes. And so, fourth busiest street in St. Paul, and then suddenly nothing. When a car went by, it became suddenly and pretty quickly kind of surprising. And one of the things that I really found fascinating, really two things. The first is St. Paul started to smell like northern Minnesota. Mm. The air pretty quickly became noticeably different. And then the other thing is that animals that live around us, and we live in a pretty large regional park, were way more present. There were fewer people out and about, fewer cars on the roads, and it took them almost no time at all to reclaim the space. And it was not uncommon to see fox, and our neighborhood was kind of enchanted in some parts and horrified in others by a pack of three coyotes that were visible and moving around. And yet nature became more visible and more present.
You write that people could get close to nature and nature could get close to people. That's mm-hmm. what you're talking about there. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we're talking with writer Michael Kleber Diggs. You can find him at michaelkleberdiggs.com. We'll have much more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Stokes Nature Center recently brought in writer Michael Kleber Diggs to headline the kickoff event to their participation in the NEA Big Read. The book Stokes Nature Center is focusing on is You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. I had a chance on Saturday to talk with Michael Kleber Diggs. I wanted to talk about George Floyd. You're right there at the epicenter, right? Mm-hmm. St. Paul. You write in this essay, birds all morning and well into the day. Birds singing even after George Floyd was killed. Even as plumes of smoke invaded the western sky, as sirens raged and helicopters spied on people. Mm-hmm. I guess I want to frame it this way. You know, that was huge, right? Mm-hmm. So many issues there, and so much played out there. And now we've advanced. I don't know if we've advanced. Chronologically we've gone forward in time several years. Now we have this weekend, big No Kings, mm-hmm. presumably quite big,
yes.
Protests, right?
Yes.
In many cities around the world. I wonder if you have thoughts juxtaposing those two events.
Right. Well, I think the first thing that ties them together is there is a reaction. People are coming into community, into protest, into peaceful protest, motivated by the desire to respond to something that has happened. George Floyd, of course, ignited responses all over the world. And in the Twin Cities, it felt that we were at the epicenter of that. The very first house I bought was exactly 12 blocks south of where George Floyd died, on the same street. And so that grocery store was a familiar landmark to me. And for me personally, I wasn't doing a lot of protesting. I had some health things that would make it not a good idea for me to catch COVID. And that was before we had vaccines, before we had an antiviral or anything like that. And so I was largely at home. But also, candidly, grateful that people felt a desire to respond to that. And I feel the same way now. Whatever a person's political leanings are in this particular moment, we have to acknowledge that this is a time of tremendous change. It's a time of tremendous division. Those divisions have become calcified and they've hardened. They've, I think, affected the way that we see each other and communicate with each other. And I think those concerns have inspired a response, a desire for people to come together and to say that they want something different, that they desire something different for their country, for their communities, for their neighbors. And I find those gestures ultimately quite hopeful.
Mm. Yeah. You have a collection called Unworldly Things. Mm-hmm. I think you have a copy of the book right here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll have you read a poem from that, and then we'll get into some a poem or two that you have in this collection that Stokes Nature Center is doing the big read, right? Mm-hmm. You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. One of your essays, you said, being black in an anti-black country is like being handed a stone at birth, a thing you have to carry and can never throw.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about Voting Rights Act is now being argued in front of the Supreme Court, right?
Right.
It's a landmark act. The Supreme Court, we don't know exactly how they're going to rule, but seems like the conservative justices kind of want to proclaim we're in a post-racial mm-hmm. world, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No need for some of the provisions in the Voting Rights Act anymore.
Right.
You know, not to get too political, but get as political as you want, I guess. But,
yeah.
But I wonder what your thoughts
yes.
are in the present time when some folks, I don't know if it's a majority, but a number of folks just want to say, let's move on. Let's move on from race.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple things. First, if the read on the court's likely reaction is correct, I would mark myself down as a dissenter. I'm not on the court, unfortunately, but as someone who doesn't feel that that's a good idea. Here's how I see it. We have right now the ability mathematically, and I would say also fairly quickly, to draw voting districts that give pretty much every citizen in the United States equal political power. We're not doing that. Clearly, we're not doing that. Our districts are gerrymandered. That gerrymandering often favors party, but it also often disadvantages people of particular racial backgrounds, black people, Hispanic people. if I've read it right, in Texas, white voters have twice the political power of black voters. And they have, I think, like five times the political power of Latinx voters. That's not fair. That's not appropriate. And what I would want for us as a country is to just play it straight up. If what we're doing is we're imagining a world where we're truly post-racial, let's be that world. Let's take it all the way out. Let's draw voting districts that just don't give anyone an advantage. Not Republicans, not Democrats, not white people, not black people. We can do that. We have the technology that would make that possible. Until our commitment is there, I'm always going to kind of regard whatever's happening in that space with a fair measure of skepticism.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a poem or two you'd like to read from Worldly Things?
Sure.
And again, this is Michael Kleber Diggs. Michael Kleber Diggs is with us. He's here with the Stokes Nature Center. It's their big read, and we'll get to talking about this other book.
Thanks.
You Are Here. And the subtitle is Poetry in the Natural World. Well, let's have you read a couple things from your collection. When did this come out?
In 2021.
2021.
Yeah. And I'll start by saying this book is kind of about three things. It's about who I'm from, so my family. It's about where I live, America and the upper Midwest. And it's also about where I would like to live. Like, what kind of world would I live in if I had the ability to shape it? And in this collection, I consider a lot of things. Becoming a father and being a father is one of them. And also, and here's what's interesting. I kind of didn't really notice this until after the book came out. I also write a lot about nature. The book came out and a number of wonderful reactions to it. But one of them is that I started getting invitations to nature writing events. And when I got the first one, I was kind of, I don't even know, perplexed. Like, why would someone reach out to me to talk about nature? I'm writing about my family and my life in the city and imagining a world where we exist in harmony with each other and that we understand our neighbors in a more profound way. And then, of course, I went back through it and I started noticing there are lots of poems about nature in here. And it made me happy because it's so present for me. It wasn't conspicuous in an interesting kind of way. So I'll read first a poem called Postcard from the Bottom of a Lake, which is about how nature allows me to think about parenting. In Maiden Rock, along Pepin's north shore, a single hawk hovers in late morning sky, swift shadow across pale blue-white. Its glide suggests effortlessness. Summer now, and nestlings can fly. I'm on retreat seeking lightness and quiet here in a cottage surrounded by windows through which I see daylilies and trees, butterflies and passerines. In my writer's thesaurus, diurnal follows ditzy, and ditzy means feather-brained. In this proximity to the word I sought feels serendipitous. Did you know Lake Pepin exists in two states? At dusk, I'll swim there and watch ruthless birds ride the thermals, parents free of offspring, juveniles migrating away. I'll float, imagining my fledgling fledged, myself fledged. Later, when work is done, I'll dive into the vast lake sourced by a river that is always, always flowing south.
Beautiful. What's the name of that again?
It's called Postcard from the Bottom of a Lake.
Ah, wonderful, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's from the collection Worldly Things.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, give us another one, if you would.
I'll stay on that same kind of theme. This is a poem called Postcard to Sean. In this case, Sean is a poet named Sean Hill who was foundational to me when I was learning poetry and trying to find my voice in poetry and led a workshop where he invited us to write poems on postcards. And the exercise there is to maximize limited space. And he shared some postcard poems that he had written poems that are letters are called epistles. And we talked about epistles also, but my time with him was very helpful and it helped me see myself as a poet. And so when I was working on this book, I wanted to have a couple of postcard poems in here and I wanted to include one to him. And this is that poem. And again, I'm favoring it because it's also deeply kind of connected to nature and to the natural world. Postcard to Sean or fraternity or chance. For example, I might write, I thought of you the other day on a trail through woods due south of the Minnesota River, just west of the Capitol. So quiet there, I heard critters scurry along the path and leaves and twigs rustle and snap, my own feet falling while I puzzled my way through some particular poem part, wanting to know more about prayer, a specific Catholic prayer I used to recite. Sean, a bird tweeted or trilled a morning song, quite short, quite grand. It got me wondering what creature calls with notes above the rattle, which led me back to you, who might know or research until you did, you out west in Fairbanks, north of me yet, still sleeping or up with your baby boy, as once I was up with my baby girl. Or I might write to fatherhood instead, or happenstance, because postcards to people are postcards to ideas, to ideals, to abstractions, their psalms, quite short. Anyway, I wanted to reach out to you and these other things to say, brother, I looked it up. I'm pretty sure it was an indigo bunting.
What was that called again?
Postcard to Sean.
All right. Yeah. It was from Worldly Things. And that's out and available now. By the way, you have, I was reading a review of Worldly Things. I don't know what this poem is about. It's very intriguing to me, just the title, America is Loving Me to Death.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, that poem is, it's a complicated poem in a couple of ways. The first is it's two poetic forms combined together. It's an acrostic poem. So if you look at the first letter of each line and read it down, it says, America is loving me to death. And it's also a modern poetic form called a golden shovel. And in a golden shovel, the last word in each line comes from a poem, a song lyric, a document, a book, a novel. And in my case, I chose the Pledge of Allegiance. So on the left half of the poem, America is loving me to death. And on the right half of the poem, America is asking me to pledge allegiance. And this is one of those ideas that comes to you in the course of a creative life where you feel really kind of grateful and challenged. That poem took me a very long time to write. The idea arrived immediately. Oh, on the left, I'll have America's loving me to death. And oh, wow, look how it aligns with the Pledge of Allegiance. And all I have to do now is fill in the middle, which took a couple of years, not all day, every day, but just going back to it and trying to find a way to make it feel like a poem and make it feel not like a project. But what I'm really kind of spending time with there is the challenge of loving a thing, an idea, a nation that so far has not been able to love you back unreservedly. And it's an interesting thing. I am intensely patriotic. I love being American. I cannot imagine living somewhere else. My desires for this country are immense and steadfast. I simply will not surrender them. And I feel like the desires that I have for America are deeply connected to the ideals in our foundational documents. And I am saddened every time we fall short of those. I try to stay steadfast, though, in my commitment to those ideals. And I think that that ends up being kind of an expression of my patriotism. So in the poem, I'm just writing about how hard it is to pledge allegiance with sincerity to a nation that has been very difficult for people like me and for other people too. And I hope that ultimately what emerges from that is an expression of my desire that everyone can do that, can pledge allegiance to the country and to its ideals, and to do that in a way that's kind of not complicated, that's straightforward. And there's a longing in there, I guess I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. And Mark is loving me to death. Again, from that's from Worldly Things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we are hearing a conversation I recorded on Saturday with poet, essayist, literary critic, and arts educator Michael Kleber Diggs. His debut poetry collection out in 2021, Worldly Things, won the Max Ritvo Poetry Prize. We'll have more with Michael Kleber Diggs following this break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with writer Michael Kleber Diggs. He was in Logan on Saturday, headlining an event from the Stokes Nature Center. They brought him in to headline the kickoff event and their participation in the NEA Big Read. And the book they're focusing on is You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. More events to come. You can go to their website, logannature.org. Here's our last segment with Michael Kleber Diggs. Well, let's turn to the reason you're in Logan. You've been brought here by Stokes Nature Center. They've they're participating in a program called the Big Read,
yes.
Right? And the book they're going to be focusing on for several events is called You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. And you're here for the kickoff events, right?
Yes.
So you're going to be doing, I guess, a reading and then, interesting, a writing workshop. So maybe we'll start with the writing workshop. What are you going to be doing there?
I'm going to be sharing ideas with people on writing poems, and within that, poems about nature. And what I hope I'll do is encourage people to embrace their inner poet, to spend time writing poems. I hope I'll share ideas on what makes poems kind of magical and interesting, and I'm really going to push it here, fun. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to spending time with people and just encouraging them to give voice to their inner ideas with respect to the natural world, which I think often end up being expression of things that are interesting or important to us.
Yeah. So you have at least one poem or two in this collection, right? You Are Here, Poetry in the mm-hmm. Natural World. Can you read us something?
Sure. And I have one poem in this book. And if I can share by way of background, You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World is a book that was edited by and put together by Ada Limon, who's a prominent American poet. And at the time that she was working on this, she was the Poet Laureate of the United States. And I am at an interesting part of my career as a writer. We think of careers in art as emerging, mid-career, and established. And I don't think it's quite fair to say that I'm an emerging writer. And I'm probably getting near mid-career. I'm not yet what we would consider to be an established writer. In the literary world, that tends to be multiple books. And I think it can also be connected to certainty around the publication possibilities for your next book, whatever that would be. And I wouldn't say that I'm there yet, but at the time that I got the email from Ada Limon, I was quite stunned. I was in France working on My Weight in Water, that book, and not checking email very much at all. And then I had one morning and I logged in just to see if there was anything that I had to respond to. My orientation was, unless it was urgent, I wasn't going to respond to it at all. And I have an email from, I think what most poets would say is from one of the most popular and prominent poets in America. And at first I thought it was maybe some form email or a notification about an essay or a Substack or something along those lines. But it's like, Dear Michael. And I was like, I'm putting a book together and I wonder if you would submit a poem for it. And I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. I was so honored and so surprised and so grateful and probably also a little bit scared. But I wrote back and I said, absolutely. There's a funny little joke in here, too. I probably got that email in June, somewhere thereabouts. And she said, we have a very tight timeline, though. We have a very tight timeline. I need your poem by August 15th. And I thought that was very funny. So I've got something like 45 days to write one poem, which, depending on the poem, could be pretty tight. But I love how the poet world is like, hey, this is... and I pretty early on wanted to write about the park across the street from my house. I wanted to talk about how my relationship with the park changed because of our dogs and because of the time that we spend in the park every day. And I also pretty early on decided that I wanted to write a particular kind of poem called a villanelle, which is an old French form, and it rhymes and it repeats lines. And it's, I think a lot of poets would say, a hard poem to write well. And that was my charge. So I wrote a poem called Canine Superpowers. And there, it has an epigraph at the right under the title. And the epigraph is Como Park Woodland Outdoor Classroom for Ziggy and Jasper. Canine Superpowers. We stroll the grounds and stop at every tree. At every chicken bone, each new cone flower. Their noses lead to everything we see. I'd be asleep if it were up to me. Still slick with dew, this city park seems ours as we stroll the grounds and stop at every tree. Perils persist, real possibilities. I scan the grass for things they can't devour. Their noses notice things that might harm me. Sometimes we'll spot a fox, surprise a bee, find trash, broken glass, have a sad encounter on our daily grounds to check on every tree. Three times we've come upon wild coyotes, sensed before seen through canine superpowers. All of them have smelled what I'm soon to see. They stare. We stare. There's no anxiety. Milliseconds transform into hours. We stroll the grounds and stop at every tree. Their noses lead to everything I see.
That is Michael Kleber-Diggs with his poem from Your Hair, Poetry in the Natural World. Yeah. Give me the title again.
Canine Superpowers.
All right, wonderful. I guess a couple things there, and the things that you've said earlier in this interview. You don't need to be in a national park.
No.
You just a park, city
right.
Park.
Yeah. And yeah. I want to expand on that even a little bit further. So our daughter is done with college and lives in New York City now. She's in Manhattan on West 150th, so pretty far up there in a city, like a straight up city. And even in New York, every tree, it's these trees, they're often gated off with these very short wrought iron gates that I think are meant to curb dogs, are persisting in the sidewalks. New York City itself has a lot of parks, including, you know, one of the most audacious parks in the United States, probably one of the most expensive parks, too. And so even in what we would regard as a very, very, very urban setting, there is nature. There's lots of it. Birds live there, too. New York City is a big-time dog town. Like, there's so many dogs in New York, and trees, and parks, and natural spaces. So one of the things that I've thought about quite a lot in my nature writing is, what is nature? Like, my goal is never to erase it. But I do think that I'm interested in expanding it and thinking for myself about how it's always around us. There's sometimes where it's super obvious. I am, as a person who lives in the Midwest in a flat part of the country, in awe of the mountains that frame Logan. And the path here from Salt Lake City driving up was stunning to me. I haven't seen mountains in a little while and completely enchanted by that. Of course, there's always going to be those facets of nature that are so grand they cannot possibly be missed. And I live near a small city lake that I see almost every day and that I love every day. It always enchants me and delights me. I always see it in a different kind of way. Different birds visit there. The light hits it in a different way. Oh, wow, now it's frozen. People are skating on it and fishing on it. But I also really like to think about how in a city setting, someone thought to put a park here and created the park in a particular way. There's a softball field and a soccer field and an outdoor woodland classroom and a golf course and a lake and a plant conservatory where my wife works and all these ways that we can kind of connect to time outdoors. And they're all kind of amazing.
Yeah, great points. The other thing that occurred to me here, and you've touched on this as well, when you were talking about the writing workshop you're doing, that's about writing about nature, but I guess reading nature and you're just going into nature. You're taking yourself into nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only about nature, it's about what nature does to you.
Correct. And how I see it differently because of my dogs. The pandemic ended up shifting a lot for me. I left a corporate job and focused my life on writing. My writing changed. Birds suddenly were showing up all over the place in my writing. I wrote an essay about squirrels. And I don't know that I could say for sure that any of that would have happened if I didn't have dogs. I might have just been tempted to be inside my house working, but they had to go outside, or at least they said they did. And because of that, I had all this time in nature, and I had two exquisite guides. Like their sensory perception is so much different. It's so different from mine. They are really going from smell to smell. I have a friend who says they're checking their text messages and leaving responses, and they notice it can be quite far away, the smallest thing. Like, I know sometimes I'm going to be jolted and pulled over there because someone's dropped a chicken bone, and it's yards away, but they can smell it. And when we were walking on that particular day, they both stopped with real intention and became suspicious. And I sensed that something was happening. I didn't know what it was. And we continued on our walk. And then there were three coyotes who had obviously also sensed that we were on the way. And they looked at us, and we looked at them. I suppose some part of me was wondering what they might do or what I would do if they did something kind of aggressive, and then they trotted off. But it was kind of a magical moment. My dogs have brought me into the park in a way that I think it might have taken me longer to do. Through them, I've seen what makes it remarkable in a lot of ways. So I am as likely to notice wildflowers there as I am someone's discarded bag of fast food. I found a little Narcan dispenser, and I was kind of troubled by that and concerned about that, and I wasn't quite sure what to do. I didn't want to take it away, and I didn't want to leave it there. And wildflowers, beautiful trees, all kinds of animals, all kinds of plants, other people enjoying the park in all kinds of ways. Some people just walking, some people really looking at or photographing flowers, people playing soccer or lacrosse. And I don't know, there's something really compelling about all of that But to have them taking me through it has been a real blessing. I have noticed that when I write about Ziggy and Jasper, I am a lot of times thinking of them as collaborators. Like, they're helping me write this poem.
Well, so leave it there, out of time. Michael Kleber Diggs. You can find him at michaelkleberdiggs.com. And such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. And Stokes Nature Center, a reminder, brought in writer Michael Kleber Diggs to headline the kickoff event of their participation in the NEA Big Read. The book they're focusing on is You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. You can find upcoming events for Stokes Nature Center at their website, logannature.org. Thanks for listening to Access Utah today.